Noel Asmar is the founder of Noel Asmar Group of Companies, an unconventional fashion house that designs uniforms and clothing for the worlds of spa and hospitality, the medical field, and the equestrian world, including the Canadian Olympic equestrian team in 2016. For Noel, her work goes beyond the latest color-blocking trends or what's showing on the runways in the myriad of fashion weeks around the globe. She views her work in fashion and design as a tool of empowerment, dignity, and self-expression for the people who wear her uniforms and clothing. Her views of the world have been shaped by her life, roots in Canada and Beirut, an escape from the war-torn country of Lebanon on a hovercraft that took her to Cyprus, and running a business that has taken her around the globe and brought her in contact with the high and the humble. How she lives her life? Noel says, eyes wide opened, nothing lasts forever. Know that when you go into things, you can change your mind. Who's judging? Hello and welcome to At the Podium with me, Patrick Huey. At the Podium is a multimedia platform that brings together people from a diverse background of lives, careers, and experiences who all share one thing in common. They have stepped fully into the transformative power of finding and raising their voices to make an impact on the world we live in today. At the Podium holds a space for everyone to share their stories, to be heard, and to bring us inspiration. Today, I'm thrilled to share the podium with Noel Asmar. Founder of the women-owned Noel Asmar Group and its respective brands, Noel is an intuitive designer and respected business leader in the health and wellness community. Noel launched her Noel Asmar uniforms in 2002, bringing an innovative, sustainable, and functional approach to dressing health and wellness professionals with uniforms that quickly became the most recognized brand in North America, synonymous with style, empowerment, confidence, and quality. The brand has recently expanded its offering with their new Asmar Scrubs Medical Scrubs collection, supporting professionals in the healthcare, medical, dental, and wellness fields. With this new collection, Noel Asmar Uniforms has become the first spa, medical, and wellness uniform company specializing in uniforms for the entire team, from practitioners and care providers to front desk and reception. Noel sat on the board of directors for the International Spa Association for 6 years and was selected to uniform the Canadian equestrian team for the Rio 2016 Summer Olympics. She has also founded her contemporary equestrian apparel label, Asmar Equestrian, in 2011 and pedicurebowls.com in 2005. Her work continues to receive international attention with features in Harper's Bazaar and Vogue, while Noel's creativity, innovation, and business savvy have seen her recognized as one of Canada's top 20 female entrepreneurs and earned her awards for innovation and sustainability. Okay, Noel, welcome to At the Podium.
Good morning, Patrick. It's really going to be a pleasure to have this chat with you today.
I am so happy. We've been trying to make this conversation happen for a minute, so I'm glad we finally were able to work it out.
Yes. It's been many years, actually. We've been chatting about what transforms as we move through our careers and our lives, haven't we?
We have. And I'll tell you, I was looking back through pictures in my phone. I have a picture from us back in 2015 in Mexico City at the Global Wellness Summit, which was in Mexico City in 2015. And we were in that beautiful museum where they hosted dinner for us. I can't think of the name of the museum. It's all the beautiful Frida Kahlo art and all of that. But I was like,
with Deepak Chopra at the time, weren't we? Didn't we have a picture with Deepak?
We did. We did. Yes, I mean, I remember that. We go back in this industry.
We do. Yeah. Yes. And so evolved, hasn't it? And everything changes personally and professionally over the years. So, yeah, it is. It's interesting what's going on in our worlds.
Everything has changed. And one thing that I did not know about you until I did a little research was that you have built this pretty spectacular career as a designer in this industry. And you don't come from a spa background or a design background. Mm-hmm. And these are not easy worlds to navigate through and to even get into. So I wanted to know how Noelle found her way into these two very interesting worlds.
Oh, that's a great question. I think for myself, I went into hospitality. My dad and my mom had small little hospitality, you know, outfits early when we were young, very, very small, you know, motels, not hotels. And my dad was in the restaurant business. So when I decided to go into hospitality, I was, you know, born and raised in Vancouver, Canada. You know, we've got our culture here. Very relaxed from a very fashion perspective. It's very relaxed. You know, North America in general is more of a relaxed dresser and just more easygoing. And then I moved to Beirut and the culture was just a 100 degree shift and was really taken by, you know, these drastic cultures that brought different even ways of dressing and different expectations. And I really paid attention. I was really curious about how dressing impacted where people choose to go spend their off time, how they go to work. So I think as a young kid, I was always very aware of how people showed up. My mom was a psych nurse. Maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. So when I'd gone through, you know, worked in a hotel opening, I went to hotel management school. One of the most profound experiences for me was opening up a hotel after the war in Beirut. So I sound almost like a veteran, but if you think about it, going from Canada to going to a place that had been hiring lots of immigrants, had been, you know, staff that had never maybe even owned a pair of new shoes. How do you empower and bring these souls to life? And I found it through clothing. I remember the first big change I made in the hotel was outfitting the housekeeping team, the ones that never get the glory, the ones that don't have a voice, the ones that are in the back of the house. They're the ones that are so important in bringing that customer service straight through to the client, the ones that have that final touch, right to their bed, right to their pillow.
I mean, they're in their rooms every day. And they're so oftentimes forgotten.
Every day. When I changed the outfits, changed the uniforms, I designed the uniforms, never designed a uniform before, but I just knew it was gutturally the right thing to do. And I remember the day these ladies, all ladies, got their new uniforms. They were crying and like just, it came from the heart. I knew, you know, most people look at clothing as just, you know, if they can afford it or they play with it. And, you know, it's a form of expression, but it's a major form of dignity, self-respect, being able to show up the way you want to show up. Or showing up in a way that truly reflects who you are, but nobody understands it from the outside. I think fashion has a name. Like I never grew up wanting to be in fashion. So my take into this world, you know, we're talking about uniforms, equestrian apparel, very stylish equestrian apparel, and some other things that we do. We do scrubs for medical. These are not your traditional fashion businesses where you're going after competing with, you know, the world of, you know, showing up fashion week and competing with all of this. I didn't have any desire to go down that avenue. This is really about empowering people in very specific audiences. So the way I do think that maybe without realizing it at the time, I got in pretty quick. I'd come from hotelguide.com. It was a .com in 2000, you know, late 1990s to 2000. So I started my first .com in 2002. I built the site myself. And I started off as spa uniforms. So I got in, very niche market, Patrick. That's the key today. It's about being really authentic in the marketplace. And maybe I was just a lot more zoned in on what I was doing. I knew my audience. I knew the people I was working for. I touched them. I smelled them. I felt them. You know, like, it's different. And in spa, I have family that are estheticians and nurses and wasn't always the most respected industry, as you remember. Yep. It was tough to show up. And, you know, there was sexual nuances. And you remember there was used to be back 20 years ago. I mean, you weren't sure what you were showing up for.
I mean, that has been that fighting for legitimacy and for professional respect, huge.
And you know, a uniform actually transformed a ton of that, the idiosyncrasies that came with not really knowing where you were going to show up. Somebody shows up in a lab coat, you get a very different feeling. You get to show up in some. So it was super empowering. And I think, you know, in the world is it's too crowded to start businesses where you're not sure who your audience is and you're not authentically driven. So I couldn't do fashion, I don't think, really anymore. It's too broad and I wouldn't understand the customer.
What took you to Beirut?
Dad's Lebanese. My dad immigrated to Canada and he's 21, I think. Mom's Canadian. A good Irish-Norwegian gal from the prairies. Very, very different cultures. But I was absolutely drawn to that area of the world as a kid. And we used to go often to visit my grandparents and my aunts and uncles. And I had a chance to open up a hotel. Like I said, the first 5-star hotel after the war ended. I thought I would go for 1 year and I stayed for 10. 10. Mesmerized by just the life. And people don't always, you know, we always have these filters when we think of countries or we think of regions. But the family life was really incredible. The family units, you know, our elderly stay at home. They don't go off to care homes. Our elderly are tightly knit into our social life. You know, kids go with you when they go out for dinner. They don't stay home and everybody's, it's a very different culture. So yeah, I think my heart was very attracted to Beirut.
And were you in Beirut during the war or did you go after the war?
I'd been through the war. Once was actually in 1992, just before the war had finished, 1991, and got stuck there. Had to get out on a hovercraft to Cyprus because there was bombing everywhere. So I've had a little taste of, you know, very scary side of, you know, what so many countries deal with every day. Yeah, and I think it brings you a little sense of humbleness, appreciation, not taking things for granted, you know, and yet you see people from all walks of life and sometimes the one with the least are the happiest people in the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting too, because I feel like Beirut before the war and possibly after, it was almost like the Paris of the Middle East. I mean, it was a cross current of culture and people. So it seems like it would be a very fertile ground for creativity, the kind of creativity that sparked you.
If you know Elie Saab, one of the greatest, you know, women's designers, he's straight out of the heart of Beirut. The food, the culture, it was a French colony for many years. French is the second language. So there's just a crisscross of cultures and it's a vibrant social. I'm so glad I was there for my whole 20s. I don't know. I would never have had a comparison to what, like growing up single and that would have been like in North America because I did that overseas and in the Middle East. It's a life-altering experience, as you know, when you live in other countries with very different cultures where you identify.
You know, you said something that struck me, that when you did the uniforms for the housekeepers, you really gave them a sense of pride and a sense of being seen, perhaps in a way they hadn't been seen before. And I was thinking about how, I think it was a year ago, 2 years ago, you launched a whole non-binary line of clothing for uniforms, which I think all industries have struggled with. How do we address the growing gender identities and how people identify? What pronouns do we use? All of these social context things that are happening. And I think what's interesting is that you did this in uniforms and nobody was doing that.
No.
And I would love to know what your thought process was around that. And did you have any kind of trepidation about stepping forward and doing something so forward-thinking, yet so necessary at that time?
No. When you know your clients, first of all, we work really closely with our big groups, our clients, as you know, and this is a fact of life. I mean, these are people and need to show up as part of the team. And that's what we specialize in. I didn't hesitate, but I have to say you have to be informed. You have to make yourself informed as best as you can and be there to really support these individuals that are going through these transitions, support the teams that are trying to keep, you know, be inclusive. Being inclusive in a corporation is not always easy because you have a lot of people with a lot of opinions. I think it comes down, honestly, it wasn't politically driven for us, for sure, because you'll see nothing we do is politically driven. It's just human.
Yeah.
It's just human. Like, I wouldn't have thought twice. It was a need. This is something that we need to do. It wasn't about if we do it. And how do you do it? You know, it only works. If we didn't just wake, I didn't wake up one morning and say, we need to do non-binary uniforms. Just open your ears. Just listen to what's going on around us. I mean, we have people showing up for work that are very uncomfortable with the situation of, you know, you're expecting me to wear this. I don't wear things like that. So deal with it. It's we overcomplicate things, and it's sometimes just have some respect for people. Like,
yeah. I mean, you make it sound so simple, and it sometimes is very complicated.
You asked me a question like personal values. How does it filter through your work? I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think as an owner, as a founder, you're driven by, you know, you're driven by your ability to be authentic because you're on your own path. There's nobody telling you what to do, how to say it, where to show up, and what you sell. That's the beauty or the challenge of being an entrepreneur. But I think you've seen, like, in today's day, last 2 years, if you're not really true to what you believe, like to your authenticity, because you hear this word authenticity way too much. I'm not sure people know what it means sometimes, because authenticity means being able to get, like, see the world. Of course, we'll all have our filters. We'd be lying if we said we didn't have our own filters. But are you connected to the people you're working for, or you have off on your own tangent and you have a secondary purpose, and that's not authentic? So for us, I've had people on our team say, we need to show up, you know, we need to talk about this because this is on the news. Really? I'm not sure that we do. Just do what you do and do it right and stay focused and don't need to get on a bandwagon.
The idea, I think you hit it, the idea of authenticity is just so powerful when you're true to it, not when you're just trying to seize a moment or seize the mic for a specific thing. But that whole idea of being authentic, yeah, I think we've lost the narrative a little bit around that.
I think you need quiet space to stay authentic, you know? The world is so noisy, we're so dialed into social media, we're so dialed into the news. It's very hard to own your own thoughts. And we don't live alone. So we also hear the people around us and what their thoughts and what they're thinking and what they think is right and what gets their blood boiling. The only way, I think, good sleep, find good time on your own. Like, we need time to stay centered. Yeah. And I think you can be authentic. They're born authentic. Kids are born authentic. You've been around kids lately? Kids are born authentic. We learn to stop listening to this inside. And there's so much chatter out there, it's hard for people to hear themselves.
Noelle, you said something really interesting about being an entrepreneur. When you set up your spauniforms.com in 2002, did you have an awareness that you were really stepping into an entrepreneurial field, or was it something different for you? Because maybe sometimes people step out into the world of being an entrepreneur and don't quite realize that's what they're doing. Did you have that awareness when you first set out with your uniforms?
I did. I actually had done a small women's collection when I lived in Beirut. I played around when I was in Vietnam on business. And I knew that that's who I am. I like to be a free bird. I like to step out of the box. I absolutely knew I would be an entrepreneur. I'd always been an entrepreneur since I was a kid. I don't know if I ever told you this, but when I was in high school, I always had a full-time, you know, a job after school, part-time job after school. And I remember in my graduating year, I wanted to make some extra money so that I could go on a trip. I took a nail course, Patrick.
As in nails. I didn't know that.
And I did all my friends in the graduating class. And instead of them going to the salon and doing their nails, I mean, I knew. I need my wings confirmation is hard, but I lead that way too, is that I let people, you know, come in and bring themselves into the business. And so long answer to a short question is yes, I knew I was going to, I was trying things. I was playing around. I was trying things. I was moving back to Canada. So I wanted to start something that I could develop back here and come back home. So I came back home in 2002. And So yes, it was very intentional.
Having lived in such diverse environments from Vancouver to Beirut and traveling the world for your work, how does that impact your view of the world?
I want to say in areas like that where, you know, the Western world sees religions in one form, because usually we never lived in multiple cultures in North America. We may have whatever, you know, religion or culture we belong to. There it's a mishmash. And it's a mishmash, like all in a tiny little city. So for example, in Byblos, where my dad was born, you have a mosque right next to a church, and you have all different facets, and they all live harmoniously together, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. It just taught me tolerance, it taught me interest, taught me to ask questions, to be, why do you do these things? And there's always a great reason. There's always, when you start to ask questions, I mean, how can you not respect people for beliefs? Now, of course, there's parameters from what we feel is acceptable and not acceptable, and things are still changing all over the world. But I would say cultural exposure it brings a different lens, gives you a different lens, more tolerant. Sit back and realize you're not the only one with a view in the room. This is important in every room, whether you're in the boardroom, whether in your home with your partner, whether you're with your kids, everybody has a view. So when you asked me an earlier question, I think it comes back down just to sometimes we lack a little respect. Respecting somebody's view is important, as you wish to be respected yourself. So international cultures, if you're on the road a lot, and I know you have too, we've all worked in Asia, the Middle East, North America, South America. We've worked and lived in multiple cultures. I hope we all came out better people, because, you know, being able, we're living with humans, not animals. So we learn to get along.
You know, Noelle, the first time I went to the Middle East, I went to Abu Dhabi. I was there for a conference, and I met a guy there who's still a friend of mine today, who's from Russia, by way of Ukraine. Yeah. And we were both waiting for our flights, and we had some time. So we walked around Abu Dhabi. And I remember they kept ringing the bells, and I didn't know what that was for. And I was like, oh, it's time for prayers. And so we walked into this beautiful mosque in downtown Abu Dhabi. And I remember I walked in with all of these different preconceptions about what a mosque was and what it meant to go into one of these places of worship. Would they welcome me coming into one of these places of worship? I clearly wasn't Muslim. All of that was at play. And the minute I walked in the door, the person who was there was like, come in.
Mm-hmm.
Take off your shoes, but welcome, come in. Kneel with us. And so we did. And I think to the point of what you're saying, and I guess it's fresh on my mind because this, of course, will be aired post today, which is the day after elections in the US. So I think a lot of things are on people's minds as we are sort of looking at how that's all going to play out. We don't really know at this point while we're taping this. But I think the idea of what you said is the idea of respect and the idea of not otherizing other people and having a lot of tolerance for people is just so critical.
Mm-hmm. People have so much to offer, get stuck behind somebody else's lens. A parent puts some filter on this, how you should be, must be, it's what you must do. Then you get to work and somebody tells you, this is how you must be, you should be, this is what you must do. Tolerance, really, again, I think it comes, we just don't have enough time to work on ourselves. It comes from that, you know, or really strong influences in your life that were good influences in your life that aren't also struggling to find their own voice. How many people do you know that have already been there? You were heavily influenced. And, you know, everything, the elections that go on and world politics, look at world politics last year.
Yeah.
Where's the tolerance? Where has dialogue brought us? Who's talking? Who's listening?
Well, no one's listening, but everyone's talking, which is probably part of the problem.
if you look at technology, can we shift to that for just a sec?
Sure.
When you look at technology, demographics have now become segregated. We used to be all on one platform.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're segregated by your age, what your interests are. We've become very specialized.
Mm-hmm.
Serves a purpose, but we lack the ability to see the whole big picture when we don't have to see that big picture anymore.
This morning, before we got on the call, I was editing an episode that we're releasing for Thanksgiving. There's an amazing woman named Janine Scott, who is the head of diversity, equity, and inclusion for the Broadway League. And we were talking in that interview, and I'd forgotten we had talked about this, and you just brought it up, that one of the beautiful things about art is that it brings people together who don't necessarily share the same political views, who don't necessarily pray at the same church, who are not the same generational grouping. And that you're in the theater or watching a piece of art or watching the ballet, you're all sharing a shared experience. No matter what lens you're looking through, you're still sharing that same experience, and you're all experiencing it and receiving it differently, but you're doing it together. What you're saying, what I'm hearing, is that there's a lot of not together right now, which is probably contributing to fractured lenses that we're all experiencing.
I think so too. It's interesting how technology even played a role in all of that.
You have three beautiful kids. You're a mom. I know that you have dreams and desires, and you want your kids to succeed and be successful. How do you manage that, letting them have their own views and their own lens, with the desire to mom and the desire to lead and guide?
I think it's so interesting because, again, three children in the same house with three different, you know, sets of goals and how they go about them. They're so tolerant. I find our children are so tolerant. They're growing up in an era that everything is exposed, right? So there are no more taboo subjects even to have conversations with your children anymore. Things that I think our parents would have been like, you know, shriveled up in the corner, not wanting to have a conversation about. Today is all out there. It's all out there. And I guess I just, you know, my husband and I both, we parent together. And I would say just have to be the parent. I find I remind myself, parenting when my kids were little had its different challenges. At this stage, when they're getting ready, they're young adults, they're looking at university, they're looking at where they want to go in their life. They still need us to be parents. And not everything goes in this house. So I find the parenting is the harder work comes as they get older. Continue to be that support and that guidance and respect their thoughts. It comes back to respecting, you know, where they see their future and guiding them. I was fortunate. I think one of the reasons I really wanted to be an entrepreneur too was to have that time, have that flexibility to be really a truly present mom. I dreamed of being, I wanted 10 kids. I tried to scare off my husband before he was my husband. 10 kids. Are you in? You're in? You're out.
He's like, what?
You're not in? Like, let's just know now before we go any further, just to scare the weebie jeebies out of him. Didn't run. And honestly, I would have had 10 kids. I want that. I'm that person. But I want it all. And I guess, you know, life taught me that, you know, I was that entrepreneur that loved the shiny stuff on the side of the road. But I had two parents that always just, I never heard, be careful. I never was led with fear. Both my mom and my dad, coming from very different backgrounds, always said, think it through, but try it. Just try it. That's a powerful response we can give everybody in our lives. Just try it. You don't try, you don't know. You don't ask, you don't know. And trying builds a ton of confidence and experience. And you're gonna fall in certain areas, and you want to build character. That's a great way to build character. Adversity. This is the generation that doesn't like adversity, the young generation. Our son, I could say this, you know, we didn't put him in academy hockey where everybody was forking mortgages to go to academy hockey. We didn't put him in the most elite school. We didn't do all of that. And for him to make it, he had to fall. He had to get up. He had to prove himself. He had to do it. He had to go the tough path. He did, for a couple of reasons. If the whole family is going to dedicate their entire world to it, you better want it more than anything. You better want that enough to get through the thick and the thin if you want everybody else to follow you. Is that any different than when you get older? You lead a team, Patrick. If you're not willing to go through and do all of that, like, why would your team do that? It's just no different.
You know, Brian Williams once said, the question of leadership, we love Brian, right? He's amazing. He said on this show, he said, the test of leadership is, are you worthy to be followed?
That'll keep you on the straight and narrow.
Yeah. Which is what you're saying. Yeah. You know, you want us to all cheer for you on the stands. You better want it, buddy.
You better want it. It's true. It's true. It doesn't matter what age, actually.
Yeah.
Eyes wide open, you know, and nothing's forever. So know that when you go into things, you can change. You can change your mind. Who's judging? You're judging. Your own worst judge, your own worst critic. Failure isn't failure. I know that sounds cliche, but who cares? Something doesn't work, try something else. Make your life interesting. Like, it's your journey.
It's almost a fearlessness. I don't know if fearlessness is the right word, but it's a willingness to step out in faith that you're talking about. Where did that come from within you?
Both my parents were like this. My mom went to nursing school. She stopped. She tried other things, went back to nursing. My father came as an immigrant, barely speaking English, worked for a week for somebody, and then started his own business with no money. Just scrappy, just tried things, you know? So I just never been afraid to try. And then always I need change. So I know myself. I need that stimulation, you know? So even though sometimes I'd love for somebody else to lay out that stimulation for me, I don't wait anymore. I just do it.
Do you think that everyone has to have that kind of spirit within them?
In which way? For work or just in general?
Just in, like, it's a life view that you're talking about, really. It's not, I mean, we're talking about business somewhat, but I think what you're describing is a life view. And I wonder, we always say, you know, you think about the way we talk about leadership development and personal growth. A lot of it is, let's go out and take the big steps. Let's tilt at those windmills. But is there an opposite to that? Is there an opposite to that, that it's okay to want to be home and be quiet and to lead a contemplative life, or to lead a life that isn't painting in broad, bright colors, but perhaps you paint in muted natural colors?
I see what you're saying. Actually, you know what? Come to think of it, I think my husband, Lindsay, used to remark this when we first met. I'd just been 10 years in the Middle East, just moved back to Canada. He was always kind of struck in by, I didn't see processes as set in stone. And what I mean by that is, if you want to open up a business, you have to go do the business license. You have all these things you have to do. Okay, well, in the Middle East, it doesn't work that way. There's no systems for you to jump on and just follow. It's scrappy. You have to figure it out yourself. You have to get out. You have to talk to a lot of people. It's not easy. There's not one office that's going to give you all the answers. You learn to be super resourceful, super resourceful. And I feel Lindsay would always say, how did you get that done today? And I'd explain it. I think that the message is, get out of the box. Like, just go find your own way. It sounds so cliche and it's not going to be what you want to hear, but you want to go to university, you do your application, you get to university, you exit, you put in all your resumes, you go, you do the standard path that takes everybody to the standard finish, because you've been told that that's the way to do it. So when I went to the Middle East, there was nobody telling me, this is the way you do it. And I do this with my kids. I say, I'm not going to tell you how to do it. You have to develop that sense of how to do it, how to get there. If you're feeling things in your social networks, you have to develop, you have to not, as soon as somebody else is telling you everything what to do, whether it's your government, whether it's, like, God forbid I just said that right now, but anybody telling you what to do, it's no longer your responsibility and it's up to them on how it gets done.
The minute you put your finger in someone's process, you own the process.
if we would just live our lives that way a little bit more, your lives would transform because it becomes your process, which is rewarding. You can live with things when things don't go right because you don't have anybody to blame. In fact, you don't even look to blame. When things go wrong in my day, every day, leading a business in the last 2 years is not easy. No guarantees you're getting up to something that's great in the morning. But nobody put that on me. So it's my game to play. And I think that's the psychology of owning what you do, how you do it, as opposed to somebody else telling you this is exactly what you need to do to get to X. Nobody really knows anyway, so don't listen.
Yeah, I figured that out pretty quickly.
Right?
No one has answers. But you know, Noel, I think sometimes the tension that I feel is that there's a part of me, and my mind still works this way. I'm like, okay, I want to do a podcast. Well, I should get a degree in journalism and go to broadcast school to learn how to do it. My mind immediately leaps to that versus, no, just
do it.
Talk to Zoom and do it and figure it out. And you know, it'll be fine. You know, and I'm always kind of talking myself back off the ledge of you have to do it a certain way or it has to look a certain way. Because I think that's part of how I was brought up. I think that's real for people, that you feel like there is a structure, there is a path that you have to follow to get the result that you want. And what you're kind of saying is create the path.
Get rid of all that structure initially until you're on the path you want to be, because the structure just creates barriers to discovery. And like that was a great example, actually, you just brought up, Patrick. You know, when I ever coach young entrepreneurs, people that they want to be an entrepreneur. Their biggest obstacle is exactly what you just said. I need the perfect business plan. I need to go get this. I'm like, no, just test a product. Test your idea. Just test it. And everything else will follow through. Really, it will. Trust in that process. By the time you finish testing, you usually lost your wind. By the time, you know, you really got, and if it's a podcast, I've watched you since you started your podcast. Like, it's been really fun as somebody who knows you to watch you do this out on your own. And I see you've got your voice and you're bringing something to people's lives and there's an exchange, but it's you leading in your Patrick way. And that's interesting to people. If you built it based off of the way somebody else did it, I could go watch that show. I could go already and watch that show. You have gifts. Everybody has gifts. We're just not always so comfortable to try them
or own them.
Yeah, you like, I could have a podcast with you and I would love to lead one because I have so many questions for you. But when I first met you, I always remember being, I could feel your energy. Like, I could always feel you had something to say, you know? And we're always stuck in these environments where it might not be our podium to be able to take the floor and say it. But imagine now you do, or now somebody else who does have things. How many people like Patrick and I were people that didn't have our own podium? So if you had a kid that didn't have their own podium, how would you encourage them to find their own podium?
It depends on the kid, right? Because every person's makeup is so unique.
Yeah. But it's confidence, right? It's just trying. Fear of failure fails us all.
You know, I'll tell you something. You know what helped me a lot, Noelle, was that my mother always expected me to be successful. Mm. She always expected, she didn't force me or push me, like she wasn't like a stage mother or anything like that. But whatever I did, I had better be the best at it. And she never would settle for less. Which made me never settle for less.
Excellence.
You know, part of the parent.
Believe in you. I mean, the basics. Yeah. Believe in the people around you if you love them.
And sometimes people need that belief because you don't have the belief all the time. I mean, I don't wake up every day going, I got it. You know, I don't know anyone who does. So sometimes you need the belief of others to help you get through it.
Especially when you're older. We're talking about kids. Who's really, we're all in our own worlds now. Now we're adults. Who has time to focus just on you?
Yeah.
Or who's focused on me? So there is another podcast on like elderly. I have my father living with us now. I have a mom that's, you know, in care. I think like our lives, we live much longer lives now. We're going to live to 90, or our generation's supposed to live 90 and plus. Like it's no more you know, 78, 80s. So I think these questions you ask yourself, how many times do we get to reinvent ourselves or to try something new? And can't really stop. We got to figure this out because we got a lot longer ahead of us.
It's whole lives to live, multiple lives to live. Noelle, what has been your biggest leap of faith?
Oh, that's a good question. Biggest leap of faith, I would say, was moving back to Canada and starting all over again. Mm-hmm. It was, because it'd been 10 years, my whole adult life really was overseas, and I was going to go start from scratch, completely from scratch in every sense of the word. And it actually gave me a chance to start, you know, with a fresh page, drop things I didn't want, try new things. It worked out. But that was a huge leap of faith when you're changing your countries again and you're rebuilding your start, building your home, everything. It's a big leap. But maybe the big leap of faith was also just leaving Canada and going to Lebanon. I don't know.
Yeah. But you believed. I mean, you still believed.
I really believe still. Like, I know there's yeah, I guess maybe failure energizes me a little bit, keeps me on my toes. Yeah. You know, I'm comfortable with the unknown, to be honest. I'm comfortable being uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable today. I won't tell you why, but I'm uncomfortable. I mean, I've got, not with you, I've got, you know, things going on in my business that make me uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. But somehow there's like categories for different things going on, and I don't deal with all those emotions at the same time. And yeah, leap of faiths are good, but just the nature of the beast for me, I'm always taking leaps, Patrick, good, bad, or ugly, but always trying things that are out of my comfort zone. Yeah. And I think the greatest challenge for me over the years has been, you know, being a good mom and being a great leader. That's constant tweaking of your own self, not tweaking of other people. It's constantly tweaking of oneself.
Yeah.
Right.
Every interaction I have now is a moment to reflect. Am I doing and saying the right thing? Or did I just blow that?
Mindfulness.
Yeah. And you have to be mindful in the moment. Like, and you have to be real time mindfulness. It's not sometimes being able to go somewhere for a week and reflect. It's like in the moment.
No, if we could just control that fraction of a second of reaction, we can learn to that discipline of not reacting. That's what I really I'm aware of today is like, you might think, you know, putting on a face, whatever you want to call it, just learn to breathe, learn to like in that moment, you know what moments we're having every day. It's just like, don't just come inside for a second. Come inside for a second. Don't wear it all here.
Yeah.
Because people, the human being reacts to all of this.
And to your energy, if your energy goes haywire, people feel it. Yeah. You think you're being circumspect.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to be a good leader and just good friend and good mom and dad, good partner. It's work. We just have to breathe and ask ourselves why.
Noelle, this season we're talking to people who have found their voice or in the process of finding their voice. And I wonder, have you found your voice? And what would you want to say or would you say with that?
I think it's always evolving, but I feel like I the one area I feel to be zoning in more around what brings me joy and what I feel can give back in life is mentoring, is being mindful to share whatever I've learned, if it could help somebody else. And I've taken a special interest. In our company, it's mostly female. I think we have only two men on, you know, in the company. And I get to see how different everybody works together and where the challenges come up are always trying to balance personal lives with their work, because it's their life, right? There's really not a hard, fast rule between the two. And for moms that want to have a fulfilling career like I did, but also really want to be the mom and be present and have all of that, or my husband who left his work to be a stay-at-home dad, I have a huge respect for not giving up one to have both or give them, you know, to do that. I think COVID actually left us a few gifts. The ability to work from home transformed corporate America, corporate Europe, to think outside the box, depending on your industry, of course, but to realize there were many ways to get things done and we needed to change quickly in order to keep our economies going. And I think that raised a huge opportunity for working mothers, mothers that could find work where they could excel in their jobs, excel in their careers, and still be moms, still have that flexibility, drop a kid off at school, come back, pick up a kid after school, and still, okay, if they had to put a couple of hours in at night, they probably don't care because they were able to get it all done and they could manage their life. I feel in this stage, it's about helping people believe or find different ways to do things so that they can have fulfilling lives.
Well, thank you so much for this hour today.
Thank you. I always love chatting with you. We can go to the heart of the matter.
To the heart of the matter. I'm grateful that you took that time today with me. I really do appreciate that. And I'm just grateful for the years of friendship.
Me too. Yeah, I am really proud of the work you're doing right now. Stay on your path. You've got great things to share and you're very embracing of many different points of view. And we need that more than ever right now.
We really do. We really, really do.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this time with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And to those of you who are watching or listening, remember, we all have a voice. Use yours wisely. Bye, everyone.